Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Okay, business leaders, are you playing defense or are you on the offense? Are you just, excuse me, hey, I'm trying to talk business here. As I was saying, are you here just to play or are you playing to win? If you're in it to win, meet your next MVP, NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is your full business management system in one suite. With NetSuite, you're running your accounting, your financials, HR, e-commerce, and more, all from your online dashboard. One source of truth means every department's working from the same numbers with no data delays. And with AI embedded throughout, you're automating manual tasks, plus getting fast insights for your next move. Whether you're competing on your home turf or looking to conquer international markets, NetSuite helps you get the W. Over 40,000 businesses have already made the move to NetSuite, the number one cloud ERP.
Right now, get the CFO's Guide to AI and Machine Learning at netsuite.com/special. Get this free guide at netsuite.com/special.
Okay, guys.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
On AI, and we all know what happened the other day with the Chinese AI company and so forth. So we'll talk about that. Mark Hamrick joins us now, our friend, Bankrate senior economic analyst. How you doing, Mark?
Doing well, my friend. Thank you for having me. Good morning.
Thanks for taking the time. I was saying earlier before you came on that I took a shift maybe about 5 years ago from being a spender and a consumer to and indulging myself to being a saver. And I don't know if that's because as you age, you realize that, you know what, it's always going to be something. Something is always going to come up. No matter what it is, something's going to come up. And I've decided to start living as frugally as I can, not crazy or anything like that, but just try to cut expenses and save money. And it's amazing how shopping on Amazon, for example, not to pick on Amazon, can become a habit. But conversely, when you start saving money and you start seeing what you can accumulate, that kind of becomes a habit, too. And I'm guessing Americans aren't getting that, or can they get that?
Well, first of all, congratulations on that transition and that victory, because I can imagine that your life has become, qualitatively better just because of that one decision. And, you know, when we have progress with our finances and if we're able to essentially achieve some of the goals that we identify, our financial well-being really begins to have an amazing sort of domino effect, because it is related to our mental health and our physical well-being. And so this isn't just a question of sort of checking a box off and say, you know, do we have enough emergency savings? It's much more than that. Can we avoid using credit cards where, in some instances, for some people, they might be the option of first resort? And so the finding this year, Tommy, is that only 41% of Americans tell us they would pay an emergency expense of $1,000 or more from savings. That means that the majority of Americans would not. So that's why I get to the notion of us being a paycheck-to-paycheck nation. And 25% of Americans say they would use a credit card to pay that problem off and then pay that off over time. And so at 41% having that level of emergency savings, that's interrupted 3 years of progress on this question, and it's also the lowest we've seen in several years.
Is it because, and is there any way to determine if it's because people can't or won't? Because I know people, and this is just anecdotal, Mark, this is not research driven, but it's anecdotal, of people who'll sit in line 2-3 times a day for their $8-9 cup of coffee at Starbucks and then complain that they don't make enough to save money.
Oh, I think, yeah. I think it is some combination, and it's very hard to measure. We'd probably have to see their bank accounts to know. But how many times have we been, let's say, in public, and we see somebody purchasing something that we know, for example, is not the best thing for them to be purchasing at that time? One of my colleagues did some work in recent days talking about how people gravitate towards spending on things like lottery tickets, or now we know, you know, this, there's a real problem right now with people being addicted to mobile gambling apps. They're showing up at addiction centers where in the past it would have been alcoholics or whatever else, and now they're addicted to gambling. There are things like that, right? But I think for the broadest part of the group that we're talking about that would like to save more, this is really a question that's been driven largely by inflation, and the result of inflation is elevated prices. And so 68% of Americans in our survey said they're now saving less money because of inflation. Now, they're telling us that. We don't can't necessarily see the impacts of that in their bank accounts, but I think that's that's reasonable evidence, at least at some level. And we know that not only now the actual inflation, but the fear of the possibility of ongoing inflation is one of the things that's weighing on consumer sentiment and consumer confidence, which are also measurable. So, you know, the main message here is that we do need to make this a priority, and from making it a priority, then we need to take the steps. And the steps, as you said, it's a lot of different things, but at some level, first of all, it is knowing that, you know, we're all on a fixed income, right? I mean, you know, we tend to think that about those who are more senior, but the reality is all of us have some predictability, or perhaps less predictability for some people, but all of us have some predictability about what our income is. And generally, we know how much our bills are going to be, but it's the emergency expense that can knock it out of whack. So it's to have a budget, to plan for that, and to focus on paying for necessities first. And discretionary or luxury items are essentially, you know, something that should be the afterthought rather than the priority. And, you know, I know you guys are excited about the Super Bowl down there. You know, we're all getting bombarded by messages right now about, well, you know, the Super Bowl or the big game, whatever it is we're allowed to call it, is going to be on, you know, very soon. And only, you know, a select number of people are going to be able to see that in person. So you better upgrade your TV between now and then. And, you know, that may or may not be an important thing for people to do. So the message really is to save first and spend second.
I'm not for any kind of government regulation when it comes to this, but just common sense, man. I don't know if it's parents to kids. I don't know where the whole thing went off base, but I see, and our friends in the car business, I love you, but to finance a vehicle for 84 months is beyond crazy to me. My mind can't even wrap itself around that, Mark. Address that, if you will, please, in terms of people realizing what they can afford and what they can't.
Yeah, well, you know, if you need to take 7 years to pay off a car loan, you know, and we know that cars are, you know, have become much more expensive, the average price around $50,000 for a new vehicle, so that's average. So the way that essentially those who are in the loan business have tried to resolve that is to extend the so-called loan term, whereas years ago, probably 4 years would have felt like a long time to have a car loan. Three, I think, is optimal for those who go that route. I realize not everybody can do that. But, you know, what is happening is they're extending these loan terms. And, of course, you know, for those who may not be as financially savvy as others, if they walk into a showroom and if the dealer or the salesperson can identify that, you know, they may not be doing as much homework, or just maybe it's their first time purchase and all those kinds of things, you know, they will adopt a series of procedures in that situation that's going to be different than the person who comes in and says, I pre-qualified for a car loan. I know exactly the model I want. I know how much, you know, that is a reasonable price to pay for it, and let's take it from there. That's much more different than the person who walks in and they say, how much can you afford to pay a month, right? And at that point, you know, theoretically, they could make a car loan go forever as to get the loan, the monthly loan down to, let's say, whatever it might be, $400, $500 a month as opposed to $1,000.
Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
There's some finagling on the finance rate as well with that, with front end and back end. We don't need to get too far into the weeds on that, but Mark, you know well what I'm talking about. So let's take a break. We'll pick it up here. We come back. I would ask y'all at 504-260-1870, if you have financed a vehicle, what kind of time frame do you have? Because I would love to have a fully loaded, tricked out pickup truck for $84,000. I can't afford it, so I don't. I drive a 2014 CRV, and I make a decent living. I just refuse to pay it because I was raised by as much house as you can afford and as little car as you need, but that's just the way I was raised. We'll continue with Mark Hamrick. The other question I have for you, 504-260-1870, and you're anonymous. That's the Oakland Art Jeweler talking text line. Could you come up with $1,000 cash emergency expense from your savings if you needed it? How liquid are you when it comes to cash? 622 traffic now, WWL. 628, couple of minutes left here. Tommy Tucker, WWL, with Mark Hamrick, Bankrate Senior Economic Analyst. New study shows that a lot of people can't come up with $1,000 for emergency expenses from their savings. Mark, people are going to hear this and get their feelings hurt, and look, a politician making promises during the campaign that they can't honor. Call the AP. That's a big story, right? Men, women do it all the time. But as far as planning goes for the future, yeah. President Trump said he was going to bring down grocery prices. J.D. Vance doubled down on that with Margaret Brennan on Face the Nation. But the fact of the matter, if you're planning for the future, you can't plan on grocery prices coming down, can you?
No, president doesn't have that lever. We wish they did, but they don't have that lever to pull. And it remains to be seen. Even if, let's say, grocery prices start to settle down, we live in a world, I have to tell your listeners this, where remarkable things seem to be happening all the time, many of them heartbreaking. And so, for example, that can be an interruption in income. We're parted from our money, from our jobs. We can be unemployed. We were talking about automobiles, insurance for both homes and cars. That's not going to be an issue that's going to be resolved in the sense of all of a sudden becoming cheaper. So let's protect ourselves, pay ourselves first, and prioritize the emergency savings account.
In the history of the country, Republicans or Democrats, independents, the Whigs, I don't care who it was. Once grocery prices come up, do they traditionally come down other than some kind of massive reset in the economy?
Well, what I would say is we have been through a remarkable period with inflation. I think President Trump is right that if we could get oil prices, to stay down, transportation costs can add to a lot of headaches. But it's not just those things. The problem is we have a lot of things coming at us, and we live in a world where things change rapidly, and that can really throw our personal finances out of whack. So we have to try to protect ourselves in this environment.
Thank you. Appreciate your time, Mark. As always, pay yourself first. We'll take a break, talk about the freeze on federal grants and loans and where that stands legally. 6:30, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan. Crescent City Connection still twinkling purple, gold, and green against the background of a pink-gray sunrise. Could be pretty this morning. Could be a nice day overall, too. Especially when you look at the way it's been to start the year. Highs of 66 today. Yesterday was nice. Highs of 72 tomorrow. 60% chance for showers on Friday, but that's early. And then highs of 70. And I was watching the news yesterday. No polar weather, no cold weather, nothing like that before the Super Bowl. If anything, kind of unseasonably warm. Highs Saturday, 63, 68 on Sunday, 70 on Monday, 70 on Super Bowl Tuesday, 68 on Super Bowl Wednesday, 70 on Super Bowl Thursday, and then we'll see what happens from there. So a federal judge has blocked that effort by the Trump administration to pause federal payments for grants and other programs further confusing plan that caused widespread confusion yesterday. Jan Moeller joins us now, Executive Director of Invest in Louisiana. Try to walk us through it. How you doing, Jan?
Great. Good morning, Tommy. Great to be with you.
Thanks for taking the time. Tell me, let's go back and try to get some facts here. What is it that happened yesterday? What did the Trump administration do, and then what did the judge say?
Well, late Monday night, the administration sent out what can only be described as a vaguely worded memo saying that they intended to pause all federal grants and loans that goes out to states because they wanted to review all this money that goes to states and nonprofits to see if there was anything that might violate the president's executive order. This hit states like a neutron bomb because states, every state, but especially Louisiana, is incredibly dependent on federal funding. Louisiana gets more federal funding on a per capita basis than just about any state. So this had the potential to affect all kinds of services that people, you know, throughout the state depend on, and money that helps keep schools, hospitals, and all kinds of institutions in Louisiana and elsewhere going. So there was widespread confusion yesterday because the order itself, I think, was almost certainly unconstitutional. You know, if you took ninth grade civics, you know that the Congress gets to spend money, and the president, no matter how powerful, can't just say we're not going to do this. There was a flurry of lawsuits yesterday, and a minute or so before this was supposed to take effect, a federal judge blocked the order. So it was a day of incredible confusion. I think a lot of angst in Louisiana and elsewhere. And now this is on pause over the weekend, and we'll see what happens next week.
So let's get back to the constitutional part of this. I was going to talk to you about the Congress spending the money. These programs were funded through congressional allegations that are set in law passed by the Congress, not executive order. Accurate or not?
Absolutely.
So then the president, in essence, is trying to pass veto a bill that's already.
Yeah.
You can't do that. I don't think you can. Can you?
No, you can't do that, Tommy. This is basic civics, and so look, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a constitutional lawyer, and I don't want to play one on the radio.
Right.
But it's pretty clear that the president can't just come out and say, even one as powerful and as far-reaching in his use of executive authority as this one, you can't just say, hey, Congress, all this money that you decided and voted through, you know, 435 representatives who voted on this, you can't just say we're not going to spend this money. We're not going to do what you said. And even though what the president proposed was just a couple of week pause, that can cause tremendous harm.
Let me
to
pick it up
people
there when we come back, Jan, because I want to talk about cash flow and all of this stuff, because it's not as though I don't know, the states are, we're talking about huge amounts of money here. I don't know if Louisiana at what point they get the money, at what point they don't. Did the order say don't spend it? I once was a program director for a while in management. I would try to write a weekend memo for the staff, okay, when I was gone, and this is what you do. And what started as two sentences, then when you see how it can be misinterpreted, became four sentences, and a two-sentence memo turned into five pages. And I only say that as an illustrative way to explain, and when you pass a law, you got to take all the ways into which it can be misinterpreted or disinterpreted, and that's why laws become so complicated, and we'll talk about that procedure, because it's not just as simple as, here's a check, go do what you want to do with it. 651 traffic now, WWL. 657, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Jan Moeller, Executive Director of Invest in Louisiana, about the President Trump's order to freeze grants and other programs, but a district judge withheld it. Who knows what happens from here? What would it mean for Louisiana if this was to go forward, Jan, in the short and long term?
Well, first, we have to really understand. I mean, the short answer is it would be devastating. It would cause absolute widespread harm to people, to families, to students, to veterans, to public safety, to schools, universities, researchers. You know, there's literally hundreds of programs that get funded by the federal government that affect people on the ground in Louisiana. Students with disabilities who get support from their school districts, transitional housing, programs like Meals on Wheels, or you know, programs that help senior citizens with disabilities get rides to their doctor's appointments. There are millions of people's lives that would become much harder if this happens. But one of the problems yesterday is this order came down and people didn't really know which programs would be affected. The administration said this doesn't affect benefits that go directly to people. But then yesterday afternoon, we heard that, you know, all 50 states, their Medicaid portals were frozen. So doctors couldn't get paid for things like delivering babies or providing services to people on Medicaid. So there's a lot we need to learn, but I think if you zoom out, Tommy, the real lesson here is, you know, we understand the President Trump's agenda is to enact new tax cuts for wealthy people and for corporations, and to pay for those tax cuts by making cuts to programs and services. The way to do that, if that's what you want to do, is to go through the United States Congress and get them to pass the bill.
Out of time. Thank you.